Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes and Dave Feschuk of the Toronto Star in here. Just heard Fergie with the Johnny Manziel comeback season podcast update, where Manziel is in concussion protocol in Montreal, yet he's doing a podcast with the Barstool guys. And my initial reaction to that was, how's that going to help you develop as a pro? How's it going to help you kind of control all of the media blitz around you and try to essentially change your reputation, because that's what Manziel is doing. It's not only about what he does on the field, it's what he's doing off the field. But at the same time, I guess with it being his own podcast, so to speak, he can kind of control the message. And there are a lot of quarterbacks in pro sports. You go down to all 32 markets in the States, the quarterbacks all do radio hits on a weekly basis on a different radio show.
Yes.
And I would assume even if they are on the IR or dealing with concussions, they probably still go on. They would be contractually obligated to go on because they get paid to do it.
Yes.
So it's really not that much different. It's just a modern era of doing it because you're doing it via podcast form.
Right, with the kind of the bad boy Barstool brand.
Who he's always been connected to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just Johnny Manziel. He sees himself as a brand, right? He's one of these athletes who sees whether or not, and you might argue, hey, Johnny, how about you build the brand of Johnny Football, the football player, who, by the way, has never played football at a professional level for any length of time or any notable moment. But no, he's a guy who has the comeback season store on the internet, right? He's selling the comeback season, SZN, Johnny Manziel merchandise. By the way, which is on sale right now, funny enough. He's got some hoodies on sale. Mm-hmm. $35 regular, down to $25, marked down. I don't know if they're marked down because things aren't going so well or the sales aren't really flying off the
shelves.
That
wouldn't shock me. If you're in the concussion protocol in the CFL, I can't imagine your brand is necessarily going over that well in the States.
It's probably not like shutting down the servers,
no.
this internet store.
But he's never going to lose sight of his brand. That's what he's always
been.
That's who he is. You cannot teach an old dog new tricks. And I know he's not old, relatively speaking, but in the sports world he is. He's been in the limelight for 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
People have known him for a long time. This is who he is. This is what he is. We know he's been working with different companies about comeback season type branding and like monsters, like with Nike and Adidas and
sure.
Puma. And I don't know if any of them are actually affiliated with him, but I believe I had heard that his people had pitched them on that idea.
Oh, yeah.
And that was before he had any idea what he was going to play like or where he was going to play and how he was going to play.
Well, it's kind of like putting the cart before the horse, as the old saying goes, because don't you sort of have to establish that you can actually come back?
Yes.
You know, like, it's one thing to say I'm coming back, but I want to see him come back before I buy the comeback merchandise. Okay?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
You literally running on the field doesn't mean it's a comeback.
Yeah. You haven't quite made it yet.
It doesn't count.
Right.
Like, I don't think Tiger Woods would be audacious enough to send out comeback season tweets or Instagram posts until he actually wins again.
Right.
And that's Tiger.
Exactly.
Who has come back from way more than Johnny Manziel and is way more established
totally.
As a brand and as a professional athlete.
Totally. Like, I like the optimism. I actually have kind of liked Johnny Manziel's attitude in this thing. Like, he seems to have been fairly transparent about it, talking about his demons and talking about how he's faced the truth of his life, which is that he's been diagnosed as bipolar. He says he's dealt with the alcoholism and the other rampant debauchery that he was famous for in his life. And hey, you wish him all the best. But when you see stuff like, yeah, I'm also doing a podcast and I've also got this line of merchandise, it's, you know, for a certain segment of the population that sort of thinks you should probably concentrate on being a football player first, they would argue you probably got your priorities a little out of whack.
And here, I would think the most important parties in all of this, in terms of the optics and how they're perceiving it, would look at it the same way, and that would be the 32 NFL teams, and he'd like to join one of them at some point. They would look at it and say, wait a minute, are you worried about selling hoodies and getting your name out there and all that and getting on TMZ and Barstool or actually performing on the field? Now, again, I don't have a problem with him having a podcast because a lot of different quarterbacks, a lot of pro athletes, they do conventional radio all the time.
Yes.
They do a weekly hit on TSN radio or whatever it is. So I don't really have a problem with that. But I haven't heard the podcast. I don't know where else he was going with the podcast. Is he talking exclusively football? Is he just joining a conversation about whatever's happening in pop culture? I don't know. I would concern myself, though, if I were his people, that if it is going anywhere, and if any topic can come up and Johnny Manziel is going to give his take on it, that can be very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
Because then he can slip up and say something that can lead to controversy or criticism from people. So that is also a little bit different when it comes to podcast form and a 10-minute radio interview on TSN radio or whatever it is.
Right. And nobody, you're right, and nobody makes an issue out of it if you're Johnny Manziel and you're burning up the CFL and you're doing all this stuff on the side, but he's not, you know? And that's the thing. There's already been one team that's looked at Johnny Manziel as a backup quarterback. The Hamilton Tiger Cats had him in their employ. You know how much they chose to play him? They didn't. They didn't play him. You know how much they thought of him as a backup? They traded him, okay? And there were those rumblings. You know, Dave Naylor talked about the rumblings of, was he the most attentive backup? Did he do the requisite studying of the playbook you need to do to impress coaches at the professional level? Did he fulfill the obligations expected of a backup quarterback in this league? And look, the Hamilton Tiger Cats didn't rip him out the door, but they didn't exactly endorse him by trading him.
No, they didn't. And that's where the jury's still out. Like, is he fully embracing being a pro athlete and playing a position that has more scrutiny than any other position in pro sports? There's a big difference between making a comeback at a quarterback position compared to playing left guard.
Yeah.
Or playing outside linebacker or whatever. There's just way more to it in terms of the playbook, in terms of being the face of the organization. You're always going to be the mouthpiece. You're always going to be the one that people want to attach themselves to. Whether you're playing well or not, you're the guy because of the position, because of the depth chart. And I don't know if Manziel is fully committed to that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that because he does a podcast, that means he isn't. But it does. Until he proves otherwise, there are reasons for you to be like, does this guy really get it? Has he ever really gotten it? Does he really actually have respect for the CFL? Because that's another area where the jury is out.
Yeah.
Whether or not he thinks this is just, hey, I'm coming up here and I'm going to sling it and I'll throw for 6,000 yards and then I'm out of here.
Well, that's what happened. Like, he basically sounded exactly like that guy on his podcast before his debut, where he threw four interceptions. He's talking about, I'm going to throw the bleep out of the ball.
I'm not nervous at all.
Yeah.
It's all good. Did you see me at Cleveland? Did you see me at A&M? Basically, this is nothing. Because I played in the NFL and I won a Heisman, this is nothing.
Right.
And I'm just going to sling it. It's a sandlot out here. And can't wait till you see this.
Right. And if you, like, look, the stories you'd be hearing to me, like, if this guy was serious about being a professional football player and he was serious about this comeback season SZN actually having success, you know, you'd hear stories about how he'd phoned Doug Flutie and Doug Flutie was mentoring him. You'd hear stories about how he was the best student of the game that the Hamilton Tiger Cats had ever seen.
First guy there, last guy to leave.
Yeah. You're not hearing those stories.
No.
You're not hearing about this guy who's a new man, who's got new respect for the game that he so badly disrespected all those years where he squandered his potential. So, you know, I'm not saying he's been a terrible citizen. We don't know exactly what's going on here. But the fact that you're not hearing those really positive spins on what's going on probably tells you something.
Right. So we'll track it. What's going to happen with Manziel? It doesn't sound like he's going to play this weekend, and he's dealing with the concussion protocol. So in football, that always seems to be a little bit quicker than the other sports. Somehow it's like 3 or 4 days and football players can get back on the field, even though the hits are much more vicious and the likelihood of being hit like that is much more...
Wow.
You know, percentage-wise, likely to happen. But
somebody, I was reading a concussion expert talked about how did the concussion protocol evolve. Funny how, you know, the recovery prescribed recovery time for players is 7 days. the exact number of days between games.
Yeah, shocking how that works.
Funny how that they just happened upon that number.
Yep.
7 days sounds good to me. Yeah, he's ready to go.
And somehow he'll be on it retroactively.
Exactly.
Right, he went on it on Tuesday or whatever it was. It'll be retroactive to Friday night.
Well, he's calling it a delayed onset concussion.
Yeah, of course.
Which I've never heard before.
Do you think he knows what he's talking about? He has no idea.
Exactly.
It was a wild scene in Atlanta last night. Braves and Marlins and... Ronald Acuna Jr., who took a 97-mile-an-hour fastball right off the elbow, and he stayed in the game for about an inning and a half and then left the game, but he is expected to play tonight. He's in the lineup card. He's leading off against Colorado. To chat about it, we head down there now and catch up with former MLB All-Star Braves analyst and reporter for Fox Sports South. Here's Paul Byrd joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's happening, Paul?
Brian and Dave, what is going on? You guys were talking concussions. I feel like I have a concussion after last night. I couldn't sleep with all the mayhem here in Atlanta. But in the end, it was nice to see the Braves get the win. And, you know, I'm pulling for that young man, Ronald Acuna. So it's great to see him back in the lineup tonight.
Well, does that change your impression of what happened last night at all, the fact that Acuna is healthy and is going to play tonight?
No, it doesn't. His recovery doesn't factor into me. I think it was the fact that it was an intentional pitch. It seemed to be, you know, I can't truly judge somebody's motives, but it had all the sign of, hey, I hit you on purpose. He stared at him. He, you know, dropped his arms. Real Muto, the Marlins catcher, you know, gave that look like, oh, man, what did we just do? I love Don Mattingly's post-game comments where he says, hey, that's not the way we operate. It's not the way we want to show the rest of MLB the way this organization operates. So it appears that it was done on purpose. And, you know, this is a young man who's 20 years old who plays the game the right way. He didn't dig in. He didn't crowd the plate. He didn't hit a home run and wield the, you know, barrel up in the air. He didn't do anything demonstrative that would demand that. The bottom line is, the Marlins missed their spots. They couldn't pitch to him. They were throwing balls down the middle. So why is it Ronald Acuna's fault that he has been blessed and works hard and has the hand-eye coordination to hit a home run? Now, if he was crowding the plate, stepping on top of the plate, he was acting like an idiot and screaming obscenities at the pitcher, that would be different. But he did nothing to warrant getting drilled. And so I think that's why everybody was in such an outrage.
So, Paul, I mean, you've pitched at that level. I mean, have you ever done that to a guy simply for outperforming your team? And B, why does it happen?
Well, no, I've never done that for somebody that's just good. You know, I hit somebody, hey, this guy's good, so I want to hit him. You know, that's ridiculous. I have hit a guy on purpose, you know, a couple, and, you know, Robert Fick was one of them. And it was because they hit our guy, Mike Sweeney, and there was a brawl that ensued. And so I knew that I needed to hit him and stick up for our guy. So I drilled him in the hip. You know, he ran to first. And, you know, I played. Robert Fick was on my team with the Braves the next year. And his wife was upset at me. You know, she's sitting there on the plane giving me trouble. And I'm like, hey. And he had to calm her down. He said, hey, it was our fault. We acted like idiots. It was one of those where I hit him. Both got warnings. We moved on, and it was over. But that was a totally different situation because they were headhunting for one of our best guys.
Right.
He got to first base. I told Mike Sweeney to say to him, hey, I picked you because I think you were Detroit's best player. And in my mind, once I hit him, it was over. It was over on the other side, and we moved on, and that seemed to be fair. There's a time where you do have to stick up for your teammates. And I'm not trying to sound macho, like, hey, you know, but there is a time where you do have to stick up for your teammates and, you know, you have to hit somebody. There's also a time when you have to knock somebody off the plate if they're crowding the plate and they're taking away you as a pitcher, the outside pitch. You got to buzz the tower, make sure he moves the feet. You never want to try to, you know, throw at anybody's head, but you may have to throw a ball up and in that causes them to move. That's part of the game. Ronald Acuna was doing none of that. None of that. It was, I'm just going to hit you because you're good. Because my other guys can't throw strikes on the outside part of the plate. So I'm going to hit you. And that, for me, was uncalled for. Again, the outrage. And as Brandon McCarthy, Braves pitcher, said, it's really hard to throw one pitch and get both locker rooms steaming mad. But that's what happened.
Yeah, 97 miles an hour, too. I mean, this wasn't like he floated one in. Like, that was a bomb.
It's the hardest pitch he's ever thrown as a starter.
Right. And, you know, the retaliation, the Braves did not retaliate last night. And I think it was Freddie Freeman who came out and said, man, we're in a pennant race here. We're trying to win games. But we'll see what happens down the road. And this is where I think the game, in general, if they want to get rid of all this garbage, the retaliation conversation has to be a part of it as well. Because context gets lost. You know, you just said it, Paul. Yeah. You felt like you had to stick up for your guys, and I don't know if you did it that game or if you did it 2 weeks down the road, 2 months, 2 years, whatever. But let's say the Braves look for retribution on Urena or the Marlins in general, and they do it next year. No one's going to remember why it happened. They're just going to say, "What the hell was that?" So if the league wants to get rid of this, obviously you've got to stop the primary aggressor. You've got to stop the garbage right off the bat. Last night was absolutely unjustified and stupid and garbage and gutless. But I think it's imperative that if they want it out of the game completely, the Braves can't feel like they got a free shot now. They can't go back at it.
Well, I would respectfully just say a few things. If, you know, Urena comes up in spring training next year and gets drilled,
okay,
everybody
but what
on both
if,
sides
what
is going to know
what if he
that
gets
was,
drilled you know, and he takes one in the temple and he's in the hospital for 2 months? What did that accomplish?
Nothing. And that's where 100% agree with you, nothing. So the Braves would never, ever say, hey, we're going to go head hunt after Urena. You know, they're never going to do that.
No.
So they're going to say, hey, okay, how do we stick up for our guy in the right way and send a message that you can't just drill our 20-year-old phenom and think it's okay? You know, what am I going to do? Ask for an apology letter? Is that going to make it okay? You know, no, you just threaten a guy's career. What if that pitch would hit him in the temple?
Right.
Or what if his arm's broken? And now, what if he never comes back from that? In other words, he comes back, but he's not as good because it shattered his elbow. And now he's got they got to piece together little pieces of an elbow to get it back together so that he can put a good swing on the ball. He's 20 years old. What if he's never the same? So there's one thing, you know, part of the game is, hey, you got hit. It was an accident. I wasn't trying to. I have to throw the inside part of the plate. No apologies ever needed for that. But when you directly look at a guy, stare at him, you drill him, and you walk towards him, and you drop your arms, that is unacceptable. So if you have a better answer of how you make that right or make that okay, you know, in my mind, I have my idea of what fair is, but, you know, I don't think that it goes without sticking up for your teammates.
So, Paul, is this something Major League Baseball has to really take a harder line on in your mind? Because this tit for tat, eye for an eye philosophy has been going on since the game began, as far as we know.
Yeah.
And yet baseball has been loath to step in and really level, you know, severe punishments for this type of activity. In this case, do you think they ought to make a statement that really does, you know, throw the book, for lack of a better term, at Urena?
Yeah, you know, the only problem is, how do you threaten, you know, and again, guys, I'm angry. I'm worked up. I feel a part, you know, of this team, even though I'm not. Love the guys. Love the way Acuña plays. I've learned a lot from him at 47 years old after a 19-year career where I say, God, man, it's so refreshing to watch him play the game. You know, so I'm outraged at the way that happened. Yes. I think Major League should enforce a stiff penalty when it is determined that it was intentional to that matter. You know, yes, I think it should be a very stiff penalty that would include a loss of pay for him from a number of days, because you threatened somebody else's career. You know,
yeah.
You did. It's not okay. You can't throw a rock at somebody 97 miles an hour because they're good and think it's okay.
Yeah, so, but yeah, what's the appropriate penalty? What do you think it should be? What do you think they ought to go for in this case to maybe send a message that, you know, the era has changed here and we don't want this to continue?
So here's the problem. I would love to see 10 games, no pay. Here's the problem. When the penalty gets increased and it becomes stiffer, people will still hit people on purpose but not show the same post hit that Uranus showed last night. And then you're going to have a lot of trouble figuring out if something was intentional or not, because I think people will get much better at hiding it. And so it is, you know, something that tempers flare. You know, we're not playing tiddlywinks. Guys know when they walk up to the box that there is that chance that it is part of the game. If it happens, you have to have a team that gets your back and cares about you. I do think MLB would be get some of it out of there with stiffer penalties to the original aggressor. I do think that is warranted. And, you know, they're protecting catchers more now. You know, they're taking steps in that direction. I think it will be a little harder with somebody throwing a baseball to be able to say intent, especially if people get better at hiding body language post-hit.
Really appreciate you detailing your take on this and what it was like.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, the Braves are rolling, so best of luck with this team down the stretch run.
Yeah, and, you know, now's not the time, right? Like, you're never going to jeopardize postseason. You got to win the game and all that. But at some point, I do think, you know, there will be something, and we'll just see how it's played out and, you know, pay close attention to it. I would never, ever, ever be in favor of drilling somebody in the head, you know, so let's make it clear that that's not what I think the Braves will ever do. So we'll see.
We'll see. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Guys, appreciate the time. Y'all have a great day.
You too. There's Paul Bird, longtime MLB pitcher and current Braves analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com. Now, he brings up a very valid point. Suspending based on intent is a very difficult practice.
Yes.
Very difficult practice. And you can shield your intent. Now, there's always been the counter. These guys are in Major League Baseball. They've never thrown high. They've never let one get away, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, when you know it could be coming, they miraculously lose sight of you know, where this ball is going.
Yeah.
But I think last night was clear as day. I mean, everyone knew what he was doing. Everyone knew who he hit, why he hit him, his reaction to it. He drops his glove. He kind of almost approached him immediately, like, you want to come at me? Come at me, because, yes, I meant to do it. So this one seems pretty cut and dry. Like, this would be an easy one to suspend. But to Paul's point, you know, if you suspend too heavily, then you can get into a cloudy area where guys are losing pitches, but they're immediately pretending that they're contrite or that they didn't mean to do it. And then you've got the appeal process, and the PA doesn't appear to really want to go down the road of 40, 50, 60 game suspensions.
No, the union would appeal it for sure. If you like, there are people saying, you know, in this instance, you know, suspend Urena for the rest of the year, right? And if they did that, you know, whatever's left in the season, 40 plus games, you know, there would be an outcry from the union, and they would you know, cry foul, and they would appeal it. But and I understand, like, there would be guys completely BSing their reaction to hitting guys when they mean to do it. They'd pretend it was a surprise and the pitch got away from them. But at least they'd think twice, right? The stiffer the penalty, the more you're going to think twice. I've always believed, I think it was Dave Hodge on the Reporters way back, had an idea that I totally endorsed and have sort of thought about myself for years but never expressed it in the way Dave did. Even now, like, the on-field penalty for hitting a batter is not big enough. One base isn't big enough. You know, it should be at least two. You know, like, oh, you know, because it's just, there's so much,
It's so dangerous.
It's so dangerous, and it's such a bad outcome for the batter,
yes,
right, most of the time, that there needs to be more onus on the pitcher not to do it.
Well, you know? That's a great point, and if it was Hodge who came up with that, I credit him for it, because I hadn't thought of that, but it's one that I would totally concur with. But this is such a layup for baseball. Like, such, like, Don Mattingly, his manager came out and said, I don't even have an explanation.
That's
like,
true.
That was so incriminating.
That does help.
When your own manager's like, I'm not sticking up for this goof.
Yeah.
Like, that was stupid. I don't know what he was thinking. He went rogue and he did it. That seems like a layup. But they're not going to have the stones to do it, because they're afraid of the PA and they know that the PA will fight back, which means ultimately it's on the players. Like most leagues and most rule changes, it's on the players to accept them and to adapt to them and to basically allow the game to evolve.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the players want that to be the case. Like, I'm fine with the Wild West if the players are like, this is how we actually want it. But I don't get this sense like that's the case anymore, because more batters are being outspoken about how ridiculous it is that they have to take the heat.
Yeah.
And more batters are getting upset with their own teammates for putting them in that situation.
100%.
So,
yeah,
you know, again, that's my take on the whole retribution thing, where I knew Paul's an old school guy. And listen, the Braves are going to get him back. They're going to hit him. Or they're going to hit somebody in the Marlins. If the Marlins had a star, they'd hit him.
Exactly.
But they don't.
If the Marlins mattered, you know.
If they mattered. Yeah. But eventually they will. And it'll probably be next year. Urina will step up to the plate. Someone will hit him. And, you know, half of the baseball world will remember it. Or maybe the majority of the baseball world. But a lot of people sitting in the stands that night who have no idea who Ronald Acuña is, who are just showing up for the game because they got tickets 3 months earlier, I'm going to say, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Why'd that guy just get hit?
There will be that, so, for sure. You're right. But I just think, like, there's a couple issues here. You're right. There's the punishment issue, which is, you're right, will probably come down to a negotiation between Major League Baseball and the union. But there's this whole issue of pitchers are too dominant to begin with, right? And the idea that they can just throw inside with impunity. And Urena has hit 11 guys this year, which kind of bolsters his argument that it was just an accident. The pitch got away from him. But we know it didn't, because we saw the way he reacted to it. But it also, it speaks to the fact that you can throw inside, you can hit guys, and it doesn't hurt you. What if it? So that's why I'm in favor of that more slightly bigger step of saying, let's, you know, this is already a season where strikeouts are through the roof and pitching dominance is through the roof. You know, here'd be one way you'd make the pitchers think twice about throwing inside, which could not only, you know, limit the number of guys getting hit by pitches and possibly being lost to season-ending or weeks-long injuries, or risks like Acuña having to be X-rayed and MRI'd and to make sure he's okay. It could maybe, in some small way, sort of diminish the dominance of pitchers, which is a major problem.
And manufacture more hits and more runs. But again, the count, because the PA represents the pitchers too.
Yes.
And the league has to amplify the importance of pitching, because it is the most important position. You know, Paul Burr is not alone. Every pitcher that's ever stood on the mound has the exact same constitution. I own the inside of that plate in terms of where you're setting up.
But, like, you better hit the inside of the plate, not the guy's elbow. That's,
I understand,
my point.
But if they're, you know, you look at Stanton. Like, Stanton is over the plate.
Right.
So,
well, that's different. Obviously, they got video. They got plenty of video. If you're over the plate and you get hit, that's not a hit by pitch.
There could be a counter to that, where the umpire has to honestly give warnings and eventually give strikes. Where if it's a guy like Stanton and he's hanging over the plate, you give him a warning the first time. If he keeps doing it, it's a strike. If he does it a third time, he's out.
Right.
Eventually he's got to step back from the
plate. There's a million judgment calls in baseball. Umpires know if a guy's trying to get out of the way of the pitch or not, and you're supposed to try to get out of the way of the pitch, right? You can't just take the – you have to make an effort to get out of the
way
of the pitch.
Although that seems to have adjusted over the years.
Yeah.
Like, it does seem like a lot of guys just sit there, take it, and they don't get called out.
And that's the counter-argument to Acuña. Like, has this guy never been taught how to shield himself?
You
tuck your elbows in, you turn your back, and you take it in the back where the big muscles are, so that you don't lose a bone that could put you out for the season that happens to be in your elbow.
97 miles an hour, though.
No, I know, but he didn't move.
He didn't move. No, he didn't. Bruce Bowen is out with the LA Clippers TV telecast, and he was chatting with Dan Patrick this morning about whether or not he believes Kawhi Leonard had something to do with it. We'll play that. We'll get into it. And ESPN Monday Night Football coming up with a really cool new idea that they're going to debut tonight or test out tonight. We'll tell you about that next. All right, News Raptor Greg Monroe will join us at 6:05. It's Thursday night, but I guess Monday Night Football's crew is working tonight, and ESPN is working with a three-man booth this upcoming season, because Gruden's out.
Right.
Obviously, Gruden is in Oakland. So the new three-man booth features Joe Tessitore on the play-by-play. He's pretty good. I haven't heard a lot of him, but I think he's pretty good. Jason Witten, who's coming right off the field right into the booth, so he's pulling a Tony Romo, who he's boys with. They're like best friends.
And yep.
I was a big Romo fan last year. I know some people thought he was a little bit over-anxious and talked a little bit too much and maybe was a little bit difficult to work with if you're pro Jim Nance, but I was a Romo fan. I don't know what to expect out of Witten, but we'll see. And Booger McFarland is also going to be a part of this three-man booth. And originally, I was of the impression like McFarland would be just kind of walking around the sideline like Tony Siragusa used to do at Fox. I think he might still do it, where they do a three-man booth.
Yeah.
He's down at one end of the field, either, you know, one team's end zone or the other team's end zone, and he chimes in every once in a while, and he's got a field level view,
kind of like a Ray Ferraro,
between the benches kind of feel.
Yeah.
Well, ESPN's taken that a step further. At least they're going to experiment with this, where they're effectively putting Booger McFarland on a crane for Monday Night Football. It's like 10 feet up, and he's just going to basically go with the line of scrimmage. So he's going to rove with the line of scrimmage and be 10 feet up and kind of have a God's eye view, so to speak, of the play. Now, this has the potential for disaster, but also comedic brilliance, because he is on the record as saying that he's afraid of heights, which seems like a little bit of a problem if you're 10 feet up in the air, if not more than that. But he thinks he'll be able to get through that fear because he'll be concentrating on the game. And he's going to be, or he's going to have equal access to the mic that Jason Witten will have. So this is new. I mean, it's going to be
really interesting.
Very different. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how it all plays out.
Apparently, they're going to have be doing a live FaceTime type thing with him. So he's going to sort of be there virtually in the booth. His face will be in the booth with those two guys, and he'll be able to, as you say, speak on the mic. He's not the sideline reporter. They're still going to have a sideline reporter.
Lisa Salters will remain in that role.
Exactly. So it's an interesting idea, and I guess they're tricking it up a little bit. You could argue that why are they messing with a formula that works? Just have a couple of smart guys in the booth talking to each other about the game. Seems to work well. Most people don't complain. But, you know, in this moment where there's, you know, TV networks are, you know, struggling for audience share, and kids are, you know, migrating to the Fortnite YouTube clips, and you know, they're trying something different, and hey, they won't be the last. I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, trying to break through and do something different, that is always going to be the case in TV, always going to be the case in media. And I'm not surprised that they're trying something. I'm not convinced it'll work, but I credit them for giving it a shot. You got to try it in the preseason. You don't want to show up week one, Monday night, with an audience of 20 million, and there's a glitch or something goes wrong.
Well, that's just it.
You don't want to be in that position, although I guess they could call an audible at the line. If for whatever reason the crane isn't working or malfunctioning or his mic isn't working, I don't know, or if he's terrified of heights and he wants to come down, something's got to give at some point. But this is generally what happens when producers, they've got a lot of time, they've got a long off season, and they want to prove their worth, and they want to prove that they can be the most creative and most unique, and they'll try it.
Yeah.
You know, and why not? I mean, listen, TV has advanced in ways, but most of it is visually. You know, you're right. The conventional wisdom is two or three guys in a booth, sideline reporter, a couple of updates here or there. We call the game, we have some fun, we move on. But even the CFL on TSN with the mic'd up players and mic'd up Friday night, and they're trying something different, and you've got to try things to find out if they're going to be accepted or not.
No doubt.
And you're not doing it for your own benefit. You're hopefully doing it for the benefit of the audience and that the audience responds properly.
Yeah. I mean, this one, I'm just not sure of the benefit. Like, what's Booger McFarland going to see from that crane that you can't see on HD screens? I mean, it's intriguing. I don't know what he's going to be able to bring of value. I mean, like, I think the guy between the benches in NHL broadcast has been great. Like, you know, you to hear the guys who do it, you know, whether it's Ray or it's Noodles on TSN broadcast, I mean, they do get a perspective that's of value, right? They hear things, they can relay, you know, without the profanity, you know, to the viewer what's being said between players, between coaches and players, between referees and coaches. That's value added. I like that. Now, will Booger McFarland from this crane, you know, 10 feet above the playing surface, be able to do that? If he can, I think it could be of value.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's gone through test runs, and I don't think he's going in raw tonight. I mean, I'm sure he's kind of prepared for what he thinks he can bring or what the producers and directors want him to bring. I'm with you. I mean, maybe there may be potential for the mic to pick up a lot. He might have to be quick on turning off his mic.
Well, I think, Ray, if you talk to Ray, it sounds like you got to have a quick thumb on the mic.
It's a science, because you're absolutely, if the benches are chirping back and forth, you can't have your mic on.
Exactly.
So you can, I'm not sure how many people would know this from the untrained eye or untrained ear, but if the play-by-play guy is throwing to the color analyst and the analyst is not answering, it's because he's like, I can't turn on my mic right now.
Yeah.
There are two guys yelling and screaming profanities, and I can't have it on TV.
And it'll be intriguing, too. Like, will the quarterback that's got to throw it away just see Booger McFarland as a irresistible target.
Lay him out.
just fling one up at the crane.
Yeah. And how? And what kind of reaction are people in the stands going to have, too? If he is blocking the sight of you.
Great point.
That, I have to believe, would be a complication. Because ESPN, they've paid a lot of money, but each respective building, they're going to want to take care of their fans.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that's going to work with eyesight. You know,
it's hard to
if
imagine.
It blocks anything off, that's going to be a problem.
It's going to be fun to see, you know, photos and video of the angle this thing's at and where it's actually sitting. I can't quite picture exactly how they're going to do it. And as you say, like how that will affect the fans sitting in the expensive seats fairly up close that would theoretically, you know, would be in the sight lines of that crane.
Someone texting in saying they need to get Sergio Dip up there having the time of his life.
Having the time of his life.
I agree. Sergio Dip on a crane would be outstanding.
It wouldn't be bad. Give Sergio another chance.
I think they have to.
Give the man another chance.
I was so disappointed with ESPN that they did not throw to him again. They had to do it. They should have done it. Give him an opportunity at redemption.
He was trying his best.
He was trying.
I felt bad for him.
I don't speak Spanish. If they threw to me to say something Spanish, I wouldn't even get that out.
Oh, I could say dumb things in English. On command.
I might have done that in English.
I may do it in the next 5 minutes.
Right.
Stay tuned.
Bruce Bowen, I don't think he said anything dumb, but he was critical of Kawhi Leonard. But I thought it was very reasonable, kind of watered down criticism,
yeah,
quite frankly. You know, if you're not familiar with the story of Bruce Bowen, who is a Spurs legend,
yes.
You know, he's not Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, even Kawhi, but he was there for what, at least two or three rings.
Yeah, three.
And one of the great defensive players in the history of the NBA. And I guess he's been doing TV with the Clippers for a while. And his contract was up, so it's a little bit murky in terms of what exactly happened here. But Bowen has gone on the record. He was interviewed by Dan Patrick today, and he said he was told that it was because he was critical of Kawhi Leonard. And again, it was not an outrageous, volcanic hot take from Bruce Bowen. I thought it was very reasoned. And he suggested that Kawhi was not getting the best advice and that basically he shouldn't have left the Spurs or should not have wanted out from San Antonio.
Which has been said by a lot of people.
Said by a lot of people. And Bruce Bowen is obviously connected to San Antonio. And maybe that was a part of it. The Clippers thought, hey, don't forget who's paying your checks here. It's the Clippers. It's not, you don't work for the Spurs anymore. But if you pay a guy to be an analyst, you're paying him to give his opinion.
Yes.
And this was a reasoned opinion. And Bowen went on the Dan Patrick show this morning. And I guess Patrick asked him, did he believe at all that Kawhi Leonard or his people, his crew, had anything to do with getting the message across to the Clippers that if you ever want to bring me into the fold, and he said he wanted to go to L.A. He never specifically said the Lakers.
Yes.
The belief is he'd rather be with the Lakers, but he says he wants to be in L.A. The Clippers happen to be there, too. Bowen was asked, does he believe Kawhi Leonard or his people had anything to do with this firing? Here's what Bowen said.
I don't think I'm that I'm that powerful where, you know, I would be the reason why someone would not want to go to a team. I mean, what are you doing? Are you playing or are you listening? And if you are listening, then listen to the words that are said and receive the constructive criticism, because that's my job, yeah, to be critical of someone's play. Now, if I'm just tearing a player down, that's one thing, but I don't think I'm big enough that someone would say, you know what, I'm not going there because Bruce Bowen is there and he's on the mic. I'm not going to deal with that because I'm the same person that's just going to call it how it is.
Yeah, I hope that's correct, because if Kawhi was actually involved in this, then that looks awful on him. That's a real problem for the Raptors, because that's him saying, I'm not staying here because I'm actually concerned with what's going on in L.A.
Yes.
Whether it's the Lakers,
right,
or the Clippers. That would suggest to me, if Kawhi was somehow involved in this, that he's made up his mind and it doesn't really matter. He's out of here because he's getting people fired based on where his next destination might be. Mm-hmm. I find that really, really hard to believe. But I am a little bit surprised that Kawhi Leonard, a guy who never speaks, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but even though Bowen was critical of him, but he said it was constructive criticism, Bowen is a Spurs legend.
Yeah.
Shouldn't Kawhi speak up here on behalf of Bruce Bowen? Like, shouldn't he say, like, hey, Clippers, and if you are Kawhi, isn't this a little bit creepy that the Clippers are willing to go this far to court you? Like, this is beyond we want to make you feel the love. This is, we're willing to tear people apart to get you here. I don't think that's a great sales pitch for the Clippers.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, look, should Kawhi speak up on behalf of Bruce Bowen, a guy who in the Kawhi Leonard realm was an all-time great Spur, an all-time great defensive Spur, a guy who was on the all-defensive first or second team 8 times, and of course Kawhi Leonard, a 2-time defensive player of the year. So the sort of a kinship there, you would have to believe, in the fact that they were guys with incredibly relentless mentalities on the defensive side of the ball and played for this storied franchise. But Kawhi Leonard, clearly, I mean, whatever the Spurs mean to the basketball world as a gold standard franchise, they don't mean that to Kawhi Leonard. You know, whatever goodwill there was, whatever kinship and fraternity there was with Spurs players and Kawhi Leonard, well, we've heard David Robinson, the all-time great Spur, rip Kawhi Leonard publicly more than once. We've heard Bruce Bowen offer this type of constructive criticism. There's no link there anymore. There's no ties there anymore. Those have been severed. The bridge has been burned.
They've all collectively turned on Kawhi Leonard.
Exactly. So, you know, and then should he speak on behalf of Bruce Bowen? Yeah, you would think if he felt a kinship, he would. But that kinship's gone, and I don't think Kawhi Leonard's the kind of guy who's going to speak on anything. He's never been a guy to speak up about anything.
And that's why I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Saying that I am is completely disingenuous. I'm not, because the guy doesn't say anything. He's never said anything. Why would he stick up now, especially for something this heavy and this deep, with free agency pending and the Clippers potentially involved in that? Maybe he wants to play for the Clippers. Who knows? But I think it looks horrible on the Clippers if it's true. If it's true that they actually said, Bowen, you're out because of what you said about a guy that we might be courting or we're hoping to court, that's going above and beyond what the Raptors have already done, where I think in a way they've sold their soul with how they've treated Kawhi and not forcing him to have a press conference, not forcing him to say something on the record, not forcing him to have a legitimate photo op and, hey, here he is, here's the introduction. It's the biggest trade they've ever made. Everyone else, when that happens, generally speaking, they're involved in an introductory press conference where you want to promote what you've just accomplished. And they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Now, that I think is because they want to make him as comfortable as possible and they want him here long term. I don't believe the Raptors would get an analyst fired because of that. But,
well, we don't know.
I hope not. Like, I hope it doesn't get to that point.
No, where, and I got to say, like, knowing people involved in the organization, I've never felt that. I've never felt that they are the type of organization that would censor analysts. You know, I've never heard of it happening. Let's put it that way. Now, do analysts toe the line in all pro sports to a certain degree and, you know, not go over certain lines because they know there could be repercussions? Of course, because especially on team-owned broadcasts, that's just the reality.
Yep.
But in this case, I don't think that's what's going on here. I think you're right. I think this is simply about Masai Ujiri attempting to connect with Kawhi Leonard in a way that the San Antonio Spurs can no longer do. And whether that means you have to compromise on a few things, such as press conferences, he's willing to do that in his attempt to connect with this guy who's so mysterious, so, you know, hard to know. And I think he's trying to get to know him, trying on Kawhi Leonard's terms and not on the team's terms.
Well, and he's obviously up for grabs, right? Because he's been spurned, regardless of us. We don't know all the details, but it sure feels like Kawhi doesn't trust San Antonio. That's why he wanted out, and now he's out. You know, and the difference also between an analyst being critical of that team that they work for or that team that pays them and then being fired or being penalized for it, that is different context than firing a guy because of what he has to say about a player who isn't even on your team.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, that's why this Clippers situation, if it's true that they fired him for this, that's an absolute joke.
But here's where you could see a plausible scenario where, you know, there's definitely rabbit ears around Kawhi Leonard somewhere. It might not be Kawhi Leonard's ears, but someone in his camp has definitely been listening to everything that's being said about him. And, you know, in those calls get made. Like, the agents make those calls.
They can call
advisors
they
make
want.
Those calls and say, what is this guy saying about my guy? And who does he think he is to say that about my guy? And if you get the right person on the phone with the right franchise, sometimes people get fired.
Greg Monroe will join us, newest member of the Raptors. That's coming up just after 6 p.m. All right, Greg Monroe will join us, newest member of the Raptors, in about 10 minutes. Clay Skipper of GQ, who sat down with Jalen Ramsey, corner with the Jags, who just lit a flame under pretty much every quarterback in the league.
One of the all-time great interviews in sports history, I think. Like, he just, I've never heard of a guy just decimating all of his opponents.
And I'll credit this guy, Clay Skipper, who, you know, I've read a bunch of GQ over the years. They're not known for their sports content.
No.
But he just kept feeding another quarterback
to
him. It was like throwing, you know, like breadcrumbs at a pigeon.
And he
it's like, well, what
biting.
About this guy?
He just kept biting.
How about that guy? How about this guy?
Oh, he's
he just
terrible.
Kept going
he's
and
trash.
Going and going. It was awesome.
Oh, he's brutal.
So we'll get into that in the next hour. Fast Chuck's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.